name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, Christ is in our midst.
He is ever shall.
We take a lot for granted in our lives. If you were to think about it, our brains actually cannot process all the information all the time that's coming at it. And I forgot the technical term, but what actually happens in our brain and in our day-to-day life is that if something is consistent, if something is fairly reliable, we don't think about it anymore. And so when I go into certain rooms in my house and turn on the light switch, I don't think about it. I don't think about all the power heading to that particular switch and going to the light bulb. When I get in my car and I put the keys in, I faithfully expect that my car will start, and I don't think about it. And as we, if you go further and further into your daily life, you realize there's hundreds and thousands of things that we take for granted and that we expect will occur at the flip of a switch, at the turn of a knob, at the simply going about in our routine. And this is, of course, normal for our brain to do this, to filter it out. Apparently, we don't simply wouldn't have capacity to focus on anything if we had to focus on everything. But it also comes at a little bit of a cost, which is particularly we take a lot of things for granted and we're not thankful. And if we want to contrast this, while I was in seminary, I remember I had a car. And it wasn't that the car always started, and it wasn't that the car always didn't start, is that I never knew when the car was going to start. So sometimes I'd run in the store and run out and hop in, and it would start right up and I was on my way. And sometimes I'd hop in and it wouldn't start. But if I waited for 5 minutes and did a magic trick, somehow mythically it would start until it didn't. And so for years I dealt with this in seminary, and it was really felt random. None of the mechanics could figure it out. But you know what I didn't take for granted? I didn't take for granted that my car would start. And those who come from poverty situations, those who come from a realm that doesn't always work for them, who don't have coffee makers that will always provide them with that first cup in the morning, those who don't have the vehicles or have to rely on unreliable systems because they don't live in the luxury that most of us do, they do not take it for granted. And if we were to go just outside of this country and go to Africa, we don't even think about it. But when we turn on the faucet, the hours of labor that we've saved, the hours of labor that in other places in the world cannot be taken for granted, and the fact that that water is, we can drink it and it's going to be somehow sanitary, that we have working bathrooms. All these very basic things are everyday life for us, not a big deal, and we forget about them, and we're not particularly thankful. And there's a problem with this, because we're called to be thankful in all things. We can't pay attention to everything, but the least we could do is acknowledge that the place where we live is particularly blessed. That the space that we inhabited, even though that each one of us has our own suffering in some way, is not the suffering of extreme poverty that we see in some countries or extreme war that we are relatively comfortable with in our society. Now today there was a parable, and the context of the parable is one brother calling to Jesus and saying, "Hey, my brother's taking all my inheritance. You be the judge." And Jesus in the verses right before today's gospel says, "Who am I to judge you? But let me tell you that life isn't simply about acquiring material blessings." And so again, that's a paraphrase. Life is not about the material. And then to illustrate this, he tells a parable. And the parable is of a rich man who has essentially, if I can say this in a non-political way, lived the American dream. He has worked hard, he has acquired, and he has built wealth on wealth on wealth. And now as his life is, as he's growing older, he looks to it, he says, it's time to retire. But what does he need to do? He's going to take his wealth, and it would be foolish for him not to do this. He's had a particularly good season, and so why throw away the crops or let them rot? Listen, why not tear down the small barn and build a bigger storehouse to store his wealth, to store his stuff, so that he can, in his retirement, eat, drink, and be married? Isn't that exactly what our society teaches us to do? I mean, isn't that exactly what we're all about? To be people who go out and work hard to acquire wealth and things, to surround ourselves with more and more stuff, to have larger and larger houses filled with more and more corners of material, that in the perchance we can go and pull something out of that closet in the one situation we might need it, and to build and to build and to build. And then hopefully, when we obtain a certain age, we can retire, we can relax, we can enjoy the fruits of our labor. Isn't that exactly what our society teaches us? And it seems very logical. It seems very, but the gospel today actually challenges it. You see, as he makes his plans and he talks to his soul, and there's an irony here, is that the struggle of this wealthy man, the struggle of this wealthy man is to decide what to do with his wealth. And you can think about this event, hemming and hawing over which stock to pick, over which storehouse to put his money in. I have so much, what am I to do with it? I have to figure it out. The same homeless person on the street who has to say, I have no food and I don't know what to do with myself. How am I going to be fed? But the rich man says, I have so much money. What am I going to do with it? I mean, this is a real dilemma here. So he builds bigger storehouses. And the punchline of today's parable is he doesn't make it to tomorrow. And the fathers of the church are particularly harsh on him. St. John Chrysostom will say, you want to build bigger storehouses when look around you. There are so many povertous people who need to be filled. Fill them as though they were your storehouses. Fill their empty stomachs. Fill them. Give them the clothing that sits in your closet for year after year and you never look at. Give them the basic pleasures of life that you take for granted and that you think are normal, but historically are absolutely unprecedented. His soul was required of him. And there is never a thought for any other person in this discussion. There is never a point when he thinks about his wealth in terms of what he might do to others. You see, biblically speaking, there is nothing wrong with being wealthy. And if you're wealthy, more than likely you have storehouses. You have excess. That is what wealth means. But the point of wealth is to be charitable. Now, politically in our culture, we discuss about the government taxing us and distributing our money. And many of us don't like this, and many of us do like this. The fact is, in the early church, all the commentary points to one thing. What do all the church fathers want this man to do with his wealth? They want him to voluntarily distribute it to those in need. And I say that caveat because voluntarily does not mean necessarily taxation. Because I don't know about you, but I have to pay my taxes. It's not nothing voluntary about it. But that as a Christian person with a Christian heart, that we're not supposed to be simply living for ourselves and looking towards a time when we can simply retire in our Christianity and relax and be happy. The Christian life is about service. It's about giving. It's about continually giving of ourselves and giving of our wealth, especially when God has given us an abundance. And there are so many that need it. And because we live in our little bubbles nowadays, we don't often see it. But it's you don't have to travel far to find poverty in our area. You don't have to travel far to find needs. But you have to look. You have to want to do that. And you have to not be simply going from paycheck to paycheck or simply thinking about how you're going to acquire your own stability. So as we head on to this American Feast Day of Thanksgiving, a feast day which corresponds with what we do in the church, which is giving thanks to God for all things, let's contemplate the many ultimate and the real blessings we have in our lives. Let us take a moment to contemplate those things that our brain filters out day to day. Let us also contemplate that there are many people who don't have basic necessities. And those same people don't have access to the necessities that we store up in our closets, and that we store up in our bank accounts, and that we store up in our food pantries, and that we store up. Ultimately, we may die tomorrow. We may not make it. We may never sit around and retire and eat and drink and be merry. All we have is now. And the gospel today encourages us to put and invest in others, to give to the poor, to help the people in need, and not to worry about necessarily our five-year plan, but to get outside of the box and begin to think about the basic necessities of others. May God bless us to be thankful for what we have and again invest in others. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, Christ is in our midst. He is.